Stuart Butler, and I'm joined today with Adam.
In person.
Adam, I'm just going to use your first name, no other superlatives or anything like that, because you're right in front of me.
And does that mean also that we've reached the point where my last name is no longer needed for people to know who you're
like
talking
to? Adam? You're like Madonna now?
Yeah.
Like Cher, probably?
Probably Cher.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could sing.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to suggest we didn't do the Stu's News today because we don't have the jingle to queue up. But if you're volunteering,
well, we could. I'll just say this.
Yeah.
I believe in life after love.
Are you going to try to drop in Cher lyrics like throughout?
Maybe so. Let's see how it goes. Yeah.
I don't know enough Cher. My discography of Cher is not that great.
That's the most famous question she's ever asked, is do you believe in life after love?
Yeah. But you got to do it with like auto-tune and a little warbling.
Yeah. Let's work our way into it. I don't know that I want to start the episode off like that, but I may.
Well, you have a producer for the first time on the episode. So like he could literally do some auto-tuning as we're going if you wanted.
John, let's think that through. I like that.
All right. So this is a special episode. You're in Myrtle Beach. You're doing some work with your team for us and going around and recording some fun social content. So we figured we'd take an opportunity to just sit down, have a little chat. I could sit down and we could renegotiate our contract for next year in front of the live audience if you wanted to, or we can just sort of talk about what's going on.
Now, is this our contract between our two organizations or the contract for me to continue on this show as a favor to you?
I've got three or four stand-ins ready to come in if you ever decide to bow out of the show. So,
well, you know what? To start the show then, let's go through who your other options are. I like that.
I don't know if that's an appropriate way to start the show. They swore me to secrecy.
Okay.
Know? They don't want you to feel like they're gunning for your job.
That's, you know what? Thank you for sharing that, Stuart. This is really nice.
I've got a feeling because we're in person, we're going to be a little more silly today, a little silly goosey, you know? But we can get some serious stuff out, right?
Yeah. And in fact, also, I guess you may have already alluded to this. I don't have the jingle up and ready today because we're in person.
Yeah. So you don't want to sing, apparently, because the auto-tune's not tied up. So no Stu's News. Let's just jump right into it. So
let's do it.
I want to talk a little bit first, and then you can talk about whatever you want. This is more of a therapy session today, again, one of those. But just like what I'm thinking about. Like the last couple of episodes before, you know, we did the Thanksgiving episode. Before that, you know, we had some just stellar episodes, right? And really got me thinking a lot about the future and what we're doing. And obviously, timing of that is we're towards the end of the year. So budgeting is going on. We've about finished our budgeting, but we're also thinking about we've restructured our organization. You know, as you know, I became president a few months ago of the organization, and we're really separating our chamber and CVB functions a little more. And it's really exciting, but it's forcing me to stretch my brain a little bit, which isn't hard. but I'm having to think about things from a different purview. You know, up until now, it's been marketing. Right? Yeah. And I've gone on record and I've talked about how DMO, Destination Marketing Organization, that should be our focus, is marketing, like promotion, communication, PR, things like that. You know, obviously there's group sales as well. So if I think about the structure as I thought about it and the function of the DMO, up until recently, I used to, like let's say 6 months ago, I used to think about it as how our teams are structured. We sort of have three or four different teams, and I'll explain why I say three or four. So one is the marketing communications team, right? That's everything from PR, that's digital experience, that's paid media, owned media, social media, all that stuff. They're sort of the engine that's driving awareness. Then you got the group sales and convention stuff, and you've got, you know, from travel and tour and travel groups, you got the Smurf groups, you got these different sort of categories.
Smurf, I actually am not familiar with that term.
S-M-E-R-F. So it's different types of conventions. So I think the E is education, F is fraternal, the M is military. So it's just smaller groups, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then not to be confused with the little blue fellas.
I was a little curious. That's a new convention category.
E, not a U. And in sports, and that's where I get to the three and four. Historically, we've sort of treated sports as a segment within group sales. And I'm increasingly thinking there's a likelihood that Visit Myrtle Beach is going to birth a new sports authority in the next year. I think it's different enough because when you look at sports, you're talking about facilities, you're talking about youth sports, you're talking about collegiate sports, you're talking about professional sports and attracting sort of sporty type events, whether that be Savannah Bananas or, so spectator events versus participation events, right? So there's obviously esports now too. So I think we need to put more deliberate focus in that and build more of a cohesive coalition in our organization.
Can I chime in on that one?
Yeah.
Just real quick.
Yeah.
You and I, in our episode with Jeanette, we talked a little bit about how live sports and owned events are probably two of the categories that are going to be most controllable for the future.
For sure.
And I think the idea that you would allow sports to continue to be kind of a small subsidiary of the team when, if you extrapolate over the next 10 years, it may be the thing you have one of the most control of. I think that's really smart to spin that out and have it be more of a focus.
Yeah, and we've been doing some research. Jonathan Paris, who's well known in that sports arena, excuse the pun, he's been inquiring at a lot of other DMOs. How are they structured right now? Do they have sports separate? Is it folded under the groups? It's a mixed bag, right? Just like anything else with DMOs, everyone does it slightly differently. So we're sort of noodling that, and we're not going to rush into it head first, but we're going to sort of be deliberate and go at a decent lick. So I'd say sometime next year we'll birth some kind of sports authority within our community and bring more folks to the table. And then the fourth category is the visitor services. And not every DMO does this, but we have a call center. So we answer phone calls from visitors or prospects. We have a live chat. We actually just replaced that with Mindtrip. So it's now AI. We're experimenting with that. I need to get Melissa on. She's our analytics research person. She's heading up our Mindtrip installation. She's been really looking at the types of questions people are putting in there. I think that would be a fascinating conversation. Then there's also the physical visitor centers, right? We have, you sent me a photo last night, we have one at the airport, right? And so we also have one here in our office. We're looking at maybe putting one downtown in a high foot trafficked area. So visitor services it's a group of functions that we perform. So that's historically sort of how I've thought about it. And that's how we're structured. But what I'm thinking about now, I'm actually working on a board. When you came into the office today, I was working on a board orientation presentation. And as we've restructured, we got to do a little bit better job sort of delineating between chamber and CVB function. And so trying to articulate what it is that a DMO does and why it exists, and first principles thinking that we talk about all the time on this show. And so I've been playing around noodling with ChatGPT a little bit today and asking it questions like, what is a DMO? Why does a DMO exist? Who does a DMO serve? And it's been really fascinating because I don't necessarily agree with all of it, but it's getting its information from the world, right?
Yeah.
So this is the current perception, I would say. It's an average of the perception. And so one of the things that through that conversation I've identified is there's two areas that I spend time in, but we haven't really articulated well as an organization. And my team certainly hasn't been asked to think this way yet, right? And so some of them listen to this show, so this will be the first time some of them are hearing it, which is wild. But one of them is the destination experience, right? And then that could be anything from major scale events. We bring in things like PGA Tour event, the Myrtle Beach Classic. We've got a Myrtle Beach Bowl game coming up in a couple of weeks. So I think major experiences, CCMF, the Carolina Country Music Fest, things like that would be World's Strongest Man. But it's also stewardship, like the natural resources, things like beach re-nourishment. It's also accessibility, making sure that the physical experience is good. It's engaging with our members, making sure they're trained, the customer service is good. It's engaging with other local power structures, you know, radical collaboration with other organizations to make sure there's sort of cohesive narratives and things like that. But overall, thinking about that holistic 30,000 foot view that is comprised of, to use the words from your book, touch points, it's made up of all these touch points that the consumer has with the destination, both virtually, but more importantly, physically. And how do we curate that and make sure that we're not controlling that? You know, I used a phrase a couple of weeks ago on an episode about the operating system for the destination. And I don't know if that's the right, like if I'm being devil's advocate, I don't know if that's the right term, right? Because I think it may imply too much control. And I don't know that we're looking to control it. I think we're looking to be a convener. We're looking to be a collaborator, right?
So because an operator is a completely different.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think there's the nerdy side of operating system, the programmatic side. So I don't know. I'm thinking, I'm going back to an analogy I've used before, which is more of the conductor, like helping to move things in the right direction, an aligner, a you know, things like that. So I got to come up with a better analogy, but I don't think it's operating system.
Yeah.
Although I might flip-flop on that. I don't know. So that's one. And then the other bucket that I think is going to be, especially based on our conversations with Kara and Jeanette, I think it's the community impact side, like both measurement of the community impact, but also how do we provide more community impact? Obviously, the marketing, the sales, all that stuff is driving economic impact. But I think we got to think about quality of life impact. I think we got to think about how do we help the members or stakeholders, whatever, however you're structured, how do we help them through the transition that's happening right now? I mean, we've seen crazy stories over the last couple of weeks, like major marketing organizations laying off 4,000 people, right? We know the rhetoric is heating up on AI. I was listening to a podcast this week that said we've got 2 years where society looks like it does now, but then beyond that, it's going to be very different, right? Yeah. So I think there's a transition that's coming, and we've debated last week and previously what that timeline is. I do think it's a little longer than I used to, but there is a change coming, and what is our role in that change, and how do we help the members who clearly aren't going to have the manpower or the expertise to navigate this world? Even things as simple as right now, you know, the best advice you can give anyone on how to get shown up, how to be relevant on the LLMs is to make sure you have schema markup on your website.
Yeah.
I mentioned this at a board meeting recently, and I've had half a dozen of our board members reach out to me and say, I don't know what that is, and I don't know who to talk to about it.
Hmm.
Right? So I think our role, that Kara made the point, right, which is us as educators, us as helpers, us almost as a marketing agency for some of these folks, is going to be imperative. So community impact, I think both in the physical act of impacting the community, but also the measurement, accountability, marketing, things like that are a place that we're going to, I'm spending a lot of time thinking about what's our role there and how do we slice that up given our current structure? And does it require a structural change? I don't know. So I've rambled for like 10 minutes, so I'll let you respond to some of that.
I've got a few different reactions. One of the things that you mentioned is the visitor experience, and I think I got a little window into how you think about visitor experience last night when I texted you and asked you for an ice cream recommendation, and you said, just try our AI tool. And so I appreciated your commitment to personally making sure that every visitor has
a unique experience. I don't think you've ever thrown me under the bus more. Now, compare that to the first time you visited Myrtle Beach when we weren't familiar with each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a different experience.
It is. So the trick is if Stuart keeps you at arm's length, you're going to get the full service.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
No, it was actually really funny because you were messing with me, obviously.
Correct.
When you sent me that text. But I had to give you a hard time.
That's fine.
You went through several things that, mm-hmm. that I want to go back on. I actually think this concept of are you the operating system for a destination?
Mm-hmm.
That's an important question that I'd like to dig a little bit into. I also think your comment about, well, are we providing true value to the community? you know, if you really look at it, the KPIs that we measure don't necessarily tie off with what our stated purpose is. And I think that's, and that's why the question's being asked. You said first principles, right? Like, we need to think about this from first principles. And I love that you're going through with ChatGPT and saying, why does a DMO exist? What's mm-hmm. the perception of a DMO and all of that? Because what we've been told for the last probably 5 or 6 years from Destinations International, who does amazing work on the advocacy side and does a lot of research into where our industry is going, they've said that our primary role is to bring value to the residents of our community. Mm-hmm. And the KPIs that we report on are visitation, tax generation, and those KPIs don't necessarily map to the members of our community mm-hmm. feeling the value. Now, it may bring value. I'm not saying that. But what it doesn't do is communicate to individual that lives in a neighborhood here in Myrtle Beach exactly what value tourism brought to them.
Yeah, I know Amir Alon with Longwoods has talked about, there's a KPI he likes, which I've seen a few DMOs use, not a lot, but a few, which is the tax break per resident, right? So you as a resident of Myrtle Beach know that because of tourism, you're saving $400 a year or whatever it is on thing. I think that's one small KPI, right? But I think we got to add more value. Like what is quality of life, right?
Well, and the question I think a resident's going to ask is, okay, well, did the $1,400 a year that you saved me in taxes, mm-hmm. Does that make up for more traffic? Does that make up for waiting at a restaurant? So I'm not sure that KPI is the KPI that's going
to
tell.
Yeah,
the story.
I don't think you. I think it's a dangerous game to get into a transactional argument on why the tourism is valuable.
And there's so much more that tourism does to improve the life of a resident. I mean, dining. You know, we went to Carolina Roadhouse mm-hmm. last night. It was so good. I actually really liked it. And
did you get the little honey croissant things?
I did. Yeah. It was incredible. And
you know, you can buy just that as a side. Like you can get a plate of just 6 of those.
We did. That was our appetizer last night.
Yeah.
And then I got the Nolan's chicken, which mm-hmm. was one of the best chicken dishes I've ever gotten. But anyway.
Oh, wow.
That wasn't the point of bringing up the Carolina Roadhouse. The point was you guys have dining here. Mm-hmm. The current community base could never support on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And so the amenities that the community gets access to as a result of tourism are crazy,
mm-hmm.
but people aren't drawing that connection.
Right.
Right? So how do we communicate that more?
Yeah, we got to do a better job. I'm not going to share the actual idea here because it's not my idea, but when next time we have Matt Steiker on, we might try to coerce him into it. He's got a really good idea to help communicate that. Mm. He just hasn't found a DMO, including us, quite brave enough to pull the trigger on it. But it has to do with that because I think you're right that there's, you know, look at Myrtle Beach, the 60,000 residents-ish. There's over 2,000 restaurants in our area to choose from, you know? So there's no way you 30,000, 60,000 people would be able to sustain that. So I think it's that. It's we got like 9 live theaters, like Broadway-level theaters here, right? So I don't want this to turn into a promotion for Myrtle Beach. But also, like, the tourism taxes help to pay for things like beach renourishment, right? Who doesn't benefit from the beach? So I think we got to find a way in our storytelling. You know, I do still feel like we're in part storytellers for the destination. We got to think about those audiences, right? And sometimes the stories we're telling should be stories that are deliberately aimed at resonating with the residents.
So I would say one of the things that probably needs to happen industry-wide is somebody doing a better job of identifying the specific KPIs that impact the residents of a community mm-hmm. and report on those consistently and somehow
maybe that's being done. I'm not aware of it, but it may be done. I wouldn't be surprised if someone's done that.
Yeah. I'd love to see. In fact, if somebody's listening and you've created this or you're doing it in your community, I'd really like to see it.
Cause how do you measure that impact? That's important. Yeah. I feel like there's some folks in Canada that have done some work around that and we may have to go research it. We're showing our blind spots here. But I'm thinking more about that. Like, and we're going to have to measure our value in different ways. I've quoted you several times over the past couple of weeks about your phrase that you came up up with off the cuff where you said we're sort of built for the illusion and of relevance. And I don't disagree with that. Like, I think it's a spectrum, right? There's different DMOs would probably hear that and say, that's not a fair characterization. But I think to some degree, we've all got some decks of cards that are stacked up that we think those houses could fall down at any minute, especially with the transitions that's coming. Like, there's no one that can put their hand on their heart and can say, I don't deliberately leverage data that is beneficial to me and sometimes maybe don't manifest the data that isn't beneficial to me, right?
Yeah, let me give you an example of that, because I got a phone call yesterday from a good friend of mine, and I'm not going to out him on the show here.
Well, you've had like one or two friends, so right. People can probably guess.
Yeah, listen to the episodes. You'll narrow it down pretty quickly. But he listened to our episode with Kara Franker, and it kind of caused him to reevaluate everything. And one of the things that he said is they're really having a hard time figuring out how to communicate the value to the community that they're bringing, even though they're bringing it. And they had kind of this aha moment when the agency said that everything was going great and all the vanity metrics that they reported on look great. And they're at the board meeting and it's like, but visitation is down.
Right.
Right. And that disconnect, I think the chickens are coming home to roost for a lot of DMOs who have built their entire illusion of relevance around metrics that don't actually resonate with the end resident, stakeholder, community member.
Yeah. And this is probably an unfair accusation. So I'll sort of caveat it with that before I say it. I think there are some folks in the industry, not all, I'm not even saying the majority, but I think there are some that are more interested in data that makes them and their organization look good versus data that gives them an accurate, truthful representation of what's really happening.
But there's a reason for that, right? Because they're trying to protect their funding. They're trying to make sure that they've got – because I think this is part of the problem is the incentives in our space don't map to providing more value to the community. It maps to, we're going to fund you if you meet these KPIs that are somewhat outdated, but at least demonstrate that you are bringing value to the community. And then you're mapping to the KPIs that allow you to continue instead of mapping to the KPIs that provide the true relevance to the community. So I don't necessarily want to just say, well, a lot of these people that are doing this are just trying to make themselves look good and it's totally self-serving. Mm-hmm. I think it might be more self-preservation than self-serving.
Maybe, but it's you're backing a losing horse, right? Because if you're measuring website visits that you generated, if you're measuring clicks from your website to your member websites, there's a chance that does not exist in the future, period, right? Yep. And so if our job is to influence people to come here, right, through the content we provide, through the marketing and the advertising that we do, we're going to have to find new ways to measure that don't exist today. Like if I equate LLMs to search engines, like with a search engine, I can sort of see what my market share is. Like I can use Google Trends to say how many people are searching for Myrtle Beach versus any other destination. And typically we come out pretty well and I can see seasonality, but I can see over the long term, am I gaining or losing market share interest from these people? I don't have anything like that from Google or OpenAI in terms of LLMs, right? And then is it like keywords, like how am I doing in terms of search engine market share and what where am I ranking? How much traffic am I getting from organic search? I can see that stuff in Google Analytics or Search Console, places like that. I have no idea which of my content is being indexed, it's not the right word, being consumed by the LLMs and being manifested back to them in some form, right? I don't know how many people I'm actually influencing when they get a response. And so without that, I mean, one, we need to go as a community, DMO community, we need to go arm in arm to the large AI companies and say, we need help with this stuff, right? And there's a relationship there. We want to provide you with more content. In exchange, we need to get more insights, right? And I think, as those technologies mature, those will probably inevitably come, especially as they try to monetize the LLM, yeah. right? There's going to be advertising components, pay-to-play, preference, and at some point. So that will necessitate more insight. But until that exists, how do we continue to show value when our website traffic's down 20%?
Yeah.
We can't just look at our stakeholders and say, it's because of AI, right? And we got to stop our stakeholders. Like, if you're a member organization like us and you're charging people for certain programs, increasingly we've created a situation where they see us as a ROI-driving marketing piece of their investment, right?
Yeah. And
I think I mentioned this on the show before.
But you did.
We've really got to start thinking about getting our revenue for what we do, not what they get, right?
I think that's big. Actually wanted to, because I listened back to that mm-hmm. episode, and I wanted to ask you some clarifying questions because I missed it on the episode when you said that.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get paid for what you do, not the revenue you directly drive.
Yeah.
Give me just the, you know, pretend I'm a stakeholder that's so thus far looked at you for the revenue you bring. What's mm-hmm. your pitch of why I should provide the same value for what you do?
Well, because we've got to show what value we derive overall, the net impact that we have as an organization. And then we've got to be specific about it, right? So things like bringing major events. Like if I go to you and I sit down and say, do you want something like Carolina Country Music Festival or Myrtle Beach, the One Flight Myrtle Beach Classic to exist in our destination? Okay, is that valuable to you? What's that worth to you? Right, those kind of things would not happen without our intervention, and you know, and you could extrapolate that to
sure.
groups, sports, you know, youth sports, another one, great one, right? So, all of the hundreds of youth sports every weekend, we've got baseball, basketball, soccer, volleyball, softball going on in Myrtle Beach, right? Flag football. There's a net positive. Now they're not measuring the direct ROI from us to the creating that to them, right? But they're all benefiting from it. So those are the kind of functions that we're doing. The visitor center, having visitor centers, like, is that valuable to them, right?
They're getting a lot more value than the clicks that are coming from 100%. Your website.
That's not
and
the
that's
value.
That's what you're trying like to communicate.
That, the stuff they're measuring right now is the minimum piece of value we're giving to them.
Okay. Right? So let's dig into that a little bit, because I think we've got DMOs all over the world right now who they basically have this cliff that they're coming up to sometime in the next 2 years that all of the metrics, or at least the majority of the metrics they've been reporting on, if they continue to report on those metrics primarily over the next however long, at some point they're no longer going to demonstrate the value that they've been demonstrating. That perception is mm-hmm. going to go away. So how do you prepare your board now? How do you let them know what's happening now in preparation for where it's going so that you don't have the cliff that comes, right? Like so you can prepare the board for when that comes so that they can start thinking differently about it than they do today.
Yeah. I mean, I think you got to start having honest conversations about what you know and what you don't know, right? I think that's important.
That takes courage though, right? In and say you don't know, I think is a dangerous game.
But I think if you state it in what you do know, like here are the trends we're seeing, you know, if we extend these trends, where does that end up? I think those are conversations. I mean, we can learn from our board too. There should be some sophisticated people on the board that you can learn from, that you they're going through some of this, especially if they're with bigger companies, right? So yeah. How do we learn from each other? But I don't think hiding our head in the sand and pretending we know everything is the answer, because we don't, and we're going to get caught out.
Yeah, I mean I'm with you. I think it takes courage to say it, but I think it's kind of like, look, nobody knows what metrics are going to demonstrate our value in 2 years the same way that it does today, and what mm-hmm. we're trying to do is measure everything right now to figure out what metrics matter. And we need you to be patient with us on that journey a little bit.
Well, but I also think they've got to be a part of that conversation, because at the end of the day, we serve them.
Yeah.
Like, and not every DMO is in the same structure as us, right? But we're a member-driven organization. I mean, everyone should be board-led, I would think. Most, if not all DMOs should be board-led, right? They're representing the community, which the board is a representation of the community, so they should be dictating your priorities, what your function is. They should be in charge of all of that, right? We as staff are here to execute the will of the board and educate the board so that they can make good decisions, right? So the conversation about what measurements should we be putting in place so that we can measure our value has to be a two-way communication with the board. It has to be. Like, it, because if I think it our value is on the marketing promotions, but they say, no, we want more groups, this is our number one priority, then, or building the off-season is a priority, or accessibility or sustainability or any of the thousands of things we can focus our time on, like, we're all got limited bandwidth. So where our energy goes, right, that's important. The board should be a part of that conversation in determining where our energy goes.
But you just scared me a little bit.
Okay.
And that's because our purpose up to this point that we've talked about is to bring value to the residents of the community that you live in, mm-hmm. right, or that you serve.
Mm-hmm.
What you just said is the board should set the priorities and what's important. And the assumption that we're making is that the board has the same desire as the residents.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. There's an inherent conflict in that philosophy of we're here to serve the residents. And I'll be honest, I'm being a little vulnerable here. I don't fully buy that people mean it when they say it.
Hmm.
So if you look back to where the original DMO came from, right? Detroit, 1896. It wasn't local residents that got together and created it. Who was it? It was local businesses.
Right.
Right? So the assumption, I think that the leap we're making is that by serving the businesses, in part we're servicing the residents, but also if we don't service the residents, they vote, right? And if they vote the wrong way, the wrong people get in power and then we get defunded. So I think what we're really saying when we say we exist to improve the quality of life for residents is we exist to improve businesses, but we also have to make sure that we're improving the quality of life of residents. Otherwise, we're screwed.
But you just identified something that I've never heard anybody say out loud in the space. You need a different communication strategy for residents than you do for the businesses in the community.
100%. Those are two different cohorts. They're intermixed, right? Because the businesses you serve, often the folks, the
and their employees
live,
do and everything.
Right,
yeah.
Right. They're intermixed. But they're two different cohorts.
But have you ever seen a true different messaging strategy for the two?
We do. Yeah, we do. Yeah,
how do you execute on that?
So one is a closed group, one is an open group, right? So one is a membership, the business community. So we have through emails, through social channels, through in-person meetings, through town halls, things like that. We have conversations with them. With the residents, you know, we have a dedicated advocacy person that their entire job is interacting with the residents. So they go to like local civic organizations, things like Rotary clubs, Satoma clubs, things like that, and they present 24/7, 365. They're doing that. We have a separate communication person that works for our businesses, then works for our local media, because our local media is a way to get to our local residents. So we have that. We do structure those differently.
Huh.
Now, not everyone has those resources, right? Sometimes all of what I just said is one person, but you got to put on different hats, because the things I want to share with my businesses, like I probably want to share with all my hotel clients the outlook for tourism for 2026. I'm probably not going to share that with the residents because it's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Right. But the businesses need to be prepared for it. The residents and the local media, I probably don't want to share it, you know, right now. So there's certain things, like what's working, what's not working. Like how we talk about like the impact of an event, you know, that comes in. That's different depending on who I'm talking to.
You've twisted up my mind little bit here.
This is why this show exists.
Yeah. Do you mind if I take you through a little exercise real quick?
Physical or mental?
Mental.
Okay.
I don't know that this show is structured for a physical exercise.
Yeah.
I want to know, in order of priority,
oh, Lord,
the audiences you need to communicate with.
Man, you put me on the spot. And I'm thinking about it like a couple of different slices, right? There's the way in terms of how much energy goes into this group, like the total sum of the man hours, financial, all that stuff, right? Because that would probably be, are we just talking visitors, businesses, and residents? Are those the
I don't want to seed it. As a DMO, who are the audiences you need to communicate with in order of priority?
Yeah. So I'm going to say those three, but there's also elected officials, right, which would include municipalities. I'm also going to caveat it and put in with the businesses, I'm going to put in like other local organizations that aren't necessarily businesses that we may interact with, right? Like a regional economic development corporation, a downtown corporation, people like that. And I'm also going to exclude other DMOs because not every DMO needs to interact with other DMOs, right?
Right.
But we choose to. I think it's important for someone like us. In terms of energy that we put in and resources that we put in, right now is visitors first.
Is this potential visitors?
Oh, so you're separating potential visitors and visitors.
Yeah.
Well, I think every visitor is a future potential visitor, but not every potential visitor is a visitor. Okay. Okay.
This isn't meant to be an attempt to stump you, by the
way.
No,
well, you are, though.
I understand how to think about it.
Yeah. I sort of think of visitors holistically, but what you're suggesting is the energy you put into attracting people versus the experience, right? That's what you're saying. So I'll tell you how it is right now, because we don't put a ton on the experience. We have the visitor centers and the call centers and stuff like that, but that's a small part in terms of resources. It's probably attracting visitors is our number one thing, and that include group sales and stuff like that, right? Number two is probably our business community, our membership. Number three is probably governmental organizations, elected officials, and number four is probably residents right now.
Okay.
That's in terms of energy. Now, in terms of importance, I don't think that's the same order, right? In terms of if we mess it up 10%, has the biggest impact, you know? If we mess up elected official relationships 10%, we're done, right? So we've got to be more precise and deliberate with that group. Same with our businesses, you know? If I mess up my marketing 10%, although it has an impact, it's not a out-of-business impact. But that has an impact on the economy. So, yeah, it's tough. We have a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're making me realize.
A lot of responsibility and, you know, when you think about the priority of who we need to talk to in what order, I think those priorities may have even shifted over the last 5 years.
Well, certainly, I think if I look at them separately, rather than comparing them, if I look at where's the pendulum swinging, right, I think the ones that I'm ratcheting up over the next little bit, certainly residents, right? Certainly my businesses. Like, I have to spend more time with both of those cohorts. I don't know I need to spend more time or want to spend more time with elected officials. So let's keep that one neutral. And I think we're going to have to figure out how to attract visitors differently that might require us spending less time on it and more time on the folks that are actually in market.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I think you're right. As I think about everything you just said, I don't know, because now I'm also like, but AI will provide the ability to reach potential visitors you never could have reached before. So that's
for sure. But that means I don't have to spend as much energy.
There you go.
Right.
Okay. That solves the disconnect that was in my head right there.
Yeah. It doesn't. It's not less important. It's about where do I have finite number of resources, financial and physical. Where do they get allocated? You know.
Yeah.
I've probably quoted him on the show before, but I'm going to quote Qui-Gon Jinn.
Okay.
Jedi Master Qui-Gon Jinn. Your focus determines your reality, right? It's another way of saying, a lot of other people do this, like motivational people talk about where focus goes, energy flows, right? You've heard that phrase before.
Yeah.
It's a similar thing, right? Where we choose to spend our time and resources will determine our reality moving forward. But we got to be deliberate about that. We can't be on autopilot. If you've just gone through your budgeting cycle, strategic planning cycle, because you're on a calendar year versus a fiscal, if you've just gone through that and you haven't done a zero-based budget and you didn't start from first principles and you're just doing a rinse and repeat tweak of what you did last year, it ain't going to work as well.
Yeah.
Because the world has changed. Consumers' expectations and behaviors have changed. Travel has changed. The economy has changed. AI has made everything change. I think
what you've said, though, that all of our listeners are going to benefit from is where your focus has been is not necessarily going to be where your focus is moving forward. So what everybody needs to evaluate right now is – where should our focus be based on the needs of the community and of the organization? Mm-hmm. And does my budget structure match where my energy and focus needs to be? Because if my budget structure doesn't match that, I need to reevaluate. And you should reevaluate the budget every year. Like you said, you should do zero-based budgeting. You know what's amazing is we are a small organization, right? Like I've got 16 or 17 people now. We don't do a ton of revenue. And I have found an unbelievable, and I shouldn't say I, because Colby, my business partner, took this on a year ago, and from software waste to
stuff you signed up for and forgot about that you subscribed to.
Unbelievable. Like for an organization like ours, the amount of bloat that we found is really embarrassing.
Yeah.
Right?
And I'm sure DMOs are.
Yeah, we have to turn a profit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, right. And DMOs, yes, DMOs have to generate a profit, but it's different, right? Like, and a lot of them are quasi-government organizations. And I would just say, if you are honest about the focus that needs to change over the course of the next year, based on the conversation we just had, your budget has to match that focus, and you have to eliminate some of the things that might be uncomfortable. Like there's media relationships that we had a client one time that just said, look, there's no value in this publication, but I need you to buy it for the relationship.
Yeah.
Those types of deals have to go.
Yeah.
You know, we can't do that anymore.
Yeah. I don't think it's just budget, right? It's focus, it's time allocation. And so one of the exercises we're going through right now is, and we're sort of starting from executive team to the directors, and then we'll go down through everyone. But we want everyone to sort of create buckets of goals. Don't worry about the goals themselves yet, but the buckets where the goals will live, so where you're spending time, right? So that could be four buckets, depending on your role. It could be 8 or 10, right? So one of my buckets would be oversight of the marketing team, right? One is oversight of the sales and sports teams. One is stakeholder relationships, so like our members, things like that, right? So these are the sorts of buckets that I'm thinking about. For each individual, those buckets are going to be different, slightly unique. I think we've got to understand not just what those buckets are, but what percentage of our time we allocate to each one of those. So I've literally got a spreadsheet that has this written down now where it's like, okay, I'm going to spend 10% of my time on this function, 15 on this, that hopefully equals 100%. And then under each one of them, I'm going to put 3 to 5 initiatives that over the next 12 months are my top priorities, right? Here are the things that I'm going to accomplish in these buckets over the next 12 months. And if we do this organization-wide, what we're going to find is a deliberate outcome is more controlled, and we're going to have more long-term impact. But it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Right? Because not only do you have to spend the time up front figuring it out, what you're going to focus on, you've also got to cut things that you're not going to focus on, right? There's things that I'm looking at on my schedule that I spend time on, and then I have to say, I enjoy this. They think it's valuable, but is it really valuable to our organization?
Are you trying to talk about this show right now?
So here I'm announcing live on the show. No. So actually, I do have. So I think 5% of my time is allocated to industry engagement. So I had that bucket so I can attend conferences. So and I think it's industry engagement and education or something like that. It may even be 10%. I'd have to go back and look. But under that is things like the podcast. I want to do more thought leadership writing too for the industry, right? I want to give back. I want to speak at conferences. I want to serve on boards, right? So if that's if I feel like that's beneficial to me as president of a DMO, then I've got to allocate appropriate time to that stuff. And none of that costs money, right? Well, the travel stuff does, but this podcast doesn't cost our organization a penny, really, right? So I think Audio Boom's like $150 a year. Yeah. Right? That's really our only expense. And then most of the time we're recording during my lunch break, and then I'm editing at home, right? So it's really not impacting the business from a cost allocation. But geez, the benefit that I've gotten, I am hands down a better leader, a better DMO employee for the conversations that we've had. Not from you, obviously, Adam, but from the amazing, talented...
just the guests.
The guests that have been on. Just think about the last two conversations that we've had with guests, right? And how that's led to me thinking completely different about how I'm planning next year. Like that, without the show, that wouldn't happen. So I've got to invest in this kind of education and thought-provoking exercise. Otherwise, I'm not as good as I could be.
This forces us to change the way we think, which impacts each of our organizations and the guests we bring on too.
Yeah. But we've also got to be careful we don't get caught in our own echo chamber of, you know, doom and gloom or spiraling based on the change, right? Because we're going to be on the fringe of this stuff, which often you tend to err on the sensational.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'm also mindful of that, which is why I've said the last few episodes, like I've changed my thoughts on the timing of some of these changes, right? Because I think we've catastrophized a little too much, in my opinion. I may be wrong now, and I may in 2 weeks I may go back and say, oh no, like Gemini 7 just came out and I'm now obsolete. But
I'm not all the way caught up with you on thinking that we're too aggressive in the timelines that we've predicted.
Yeah.
I think it may be a little slower than we thought, but I also, I think I talked about this before, but worst case scenario, everybody was prepared a little too early. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'd much rather err on this side.
Yeah. That makes sense. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation.
Yeah.
I guess we've got to wrap it up.
It's stretched my mind. For sure.
Today. Yeah. My mind is blown. I will leave you with this. I've started a new routine in the mornings that I'm just going to evangelize to you and everyone.
Okay.
Have you ever read the book, The Miracle Morning?
I haven't. You mentioned to me before that you were reading this. I want to hear how it shook out.
You know, our boss does it. He gets up super early. I'm not doing that. And the beauty of The Miracle Morning is you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to follow the exact blueprint. But the concept is... commit to yourself that you're going to get up and do a certain routine of things every morning, whether that's for a minute each or for 30 minutes each. It doesn't matter. I'm still evolving mine. I'm literally 3 days into I did an experiment of it on Thanksgiving Day. So that was last Thursday. But then I said, I'm going to commit to it. And I said it out loud. I told my wife. I told my kids. So they're my accountability buddies because everyone needs this. I said, every day for the month of December, I'm going to get up and set my alarm. I'm not going to hit snooze. I'm not going to lay in bed and scroll and news or videos or whatever it is I used to do and still want to do when I'm laying in bed and goof off for 30 minutes. I'm going to get up and I'm going to start the routine, right? Right now, my routine consists of some stretching, which is really good as you get older to do some stretching.
When I'm your age, I will, for sure.
You've got a few years. I'm consuming some supplement-y stuff like greens and some other things. I'm exercising. I'm meditating, which I used to meditate a lot. And I'm telling you, man, that's a game changer. Mm. Like meditation, take all the woo-woo stuff out. Look at the actual science. There's over 14,000 documents, like scientific journals that talk about the benefits of meditation, mindfulness meditation. And so, and again, there's no perfect way to do this. But I'm also doing some gratitude stuff, some journaling stuff, and then some personal development stuff. It takes me about 90 minutes in the morning. So I'm getting up early. I'm setting my alarm for right before 6 o'clock every morning. But I'm literally day one, I was like, okay, I can do this, committed. Day two, I was like, oh, man, because I went to bed late that night, the night before too. But last night, I was excited about waking up in the morning doing this. And I'm only 3 days in. So I'm committed to 30 days. Now I put it out in the universe. Like the Desties are going to have to hold me accountable too. But I'm so much more productive for the first half of the day. Like I'm getting to work a little bit earlier because of this. But I'm like my first 2 or 3 hours are like, I'm a superhuman. Like I'm super productive. It's really interesting.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
I'll keep you updated on my journey.
But I want to hear about it.
Yeah,
I want to hear about it after day three. You know, like what's day 13 like?
I'm committed. So I've got a hack that I've implemented in my life that is, well, there's a couple that I sort of have that have helped me out. So one is, if I make a covenant with myself, like I actually call it a covenant, I don't break it.
Hmm.
Like it's beyond. It's like a sacred vow to myself. I don't do it. Right. I very rarely make a sacred covenant with myself because I don't want to break the rule of I don't break covenants. Two is I always want to serve my future self.
Hmm.
Right? I'm always going to pick deferred gratification. I'm always going to pick something that pains me in the short term because it benefits me in the long term. So I believe if your present self serves your future self, you're going to be better off, right? But the third one I heard recently, which is, don't quit today. Whatever you do, don't quit today. Like you can quit tomorrow, but don't quit today.
Yeah, I like that one.
And so that one I think will get me through the 30 days. Now I might come back in a week and say, yeah, dude, like the early mornings didn't work out for me and I'm off the wagon. But right now I feel really good. I'm 10% in 3 days out of the month. So 10% in.
Yeah, I'm excited. Great. I'll definitely ask you about it each week to make sure we're holding you accountable here.
Yeah, I haven't hit a weekend yet, right? That's going to be interesting.
that's going to be tough. Cool.
Yeah, man. Well, thank you for being in Myrtle Beach, man.
Yeah, it's fun to be here.
Thank you for contributing to the economy.
And you know what? Last night at dinner, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Well, it was great. And I think some of your team's taking some of my team out tomorrow. Is that
tomorrow.
Right? Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, he'll probably contribute even more to the economy then. I told him to all order the lobster and steak.
Good. I appreciate that. You know what? You're always looking out for me, and then I know. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Adam, for being on. If you're listening to this, then we appreciate it because you've listened to us ramble for a long time without a really intelligent guest on today.
Can I, real quick, I want to congratulate a Desti. We've got a Desti that has started a new podcast, episode one. I believe he may even be a couple episodes in now. Caleb Sullivan launched his podcast, so everybody needs to go listen to it.
What's it called? Do you know?
It's either Give Me Some Good News. It's something about.
Felt like before you shouted out, you should probably know the name.
I know. I looked at it and I was thinking through it. Now I can't.
And I could tell you didn't know the way you said it, so that's why I asked specifically.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that, Caleb. Congratulations.
Well, next time Cabe's on the show, he can certainly give it a plug. And let's look up the name before next time.
Okay. I'll say the correct name next time. He'll get double
promotion.
I need
to go listen to it. There you go. That's great. Well, shout out to Caleb. Please leave a like, share, review, all that fun stuff. We definitely – I got – actually, Adam, after the Thanksgiving episode, I sent a emailed us a few folks too, but I got a lot of good feedback to like just people liking the show, appreciating us and what we're doing for the industry. So
that's awesome.
We should feel good. And we're working right now on our next slate of guests, and we've got some heavy hitters coming on.
Pretty great episodes coming up.
Some folks that have been on the show before and want to come back. So I guess we're doing something right. We didn't scare them off.
Well, we're going to be on stage in 2026 as well.
We've got a couple coming up, right? Yeah. So we've got the DI Marcom. We're going to be on stage, and then we're going to be at the South Carolina Governors Conference. Yeah. So
super exciting.
Yeah, it'll be fun. So thank you for listening. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody. There you go. There's your ending right there.
Yeah, but I'm in charge of editing, so that is not making the cut.